The Arctic, the Atlantic, the Indian, the Pacific, the Southern, the Danny, the Deborah. These are the most famous oceans of the world.
I had no idea where you were going with that.
He had a very puzzled look on his face.
If you could see me, I was just like so confused. Ocean? What about these oceans?
Geographically speaking, there's only five oceans. But cinematically speaking, there's three oceans of 11s and 8s. It's a lot of numbers.
That was a good opener.
Thank you. All right. Well, this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast.
About unoriginality. That was a wave of emotion.
Oh, I got you.
Sadly, today, our other producer, Josh, cannot be with us. But we have Eddie Z here. Say hi, Eddie.
Hi, guys.
Eddie Z.
Eddie Z, I hope we can hear you because you're not mic'd up. So
I think we'll get him.
Okay.
We'll get him.
You gotta scream loud, Eddie.
Okay.
Okay.
That was good. And we also have Bobby sitting in between us, the beautiful dog that Rolando owns.
Yes. Hi, Bobby.
And how are you, Rolando?
I'm all right. I'm feeling a little sick, so you might hear it in my voice. I apologize for being so nasally. But you know, that's life.
Yeah. That's life. That's a good segue because you know who sings That's Life?
I'm going to say Frank Sinatra?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Okay, good. I had to like, it was either Frank Sinatra or Dean Martin.
It's old Blue Eyes, as they call him. So today we're going to be talking about the Oceans film series, the original 1960, the remake in 2001. We're not talking about those sequels. And the latest revival with an all-female cast. Are you excited?
I'm actually super excited because... Well, we'll find out what I thought about Ocean's 8. So.
Okay. All right. Sweet. So history lesson. Let's go back in time.
How lucky could one guy be? I actually know that song. It's so funny. Ocean's 11, the original one, has all the music that I think is associated still to this day with Vegas.
With Vegas. Mm-hmm. And with the Rat Pack, even. I think that might be, other than That's Amore, that's like Dean Martin's most famous song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had no idea that Ain't That a Kick in the Head came from the Ocean's 11 movie. It was written for him for this film.
Oh, really? That, yeah. Yeah, they didn't see.
So it's 1960. JFK runs and then eventually becomes president of the United States of America. And in cinema... Spartacus was the most successful film of the year. The film that we're going to be discussing was the eighth most top grossing film of the year. But also this is the year that Psycho came out.
Oh.
So these are the type of movies that are coming out in 1960. So, and Elvis Presley came back and he was starred in G.I. Blues, his post-war film. Because I always got to throw some Elvis stuff in there. Okay, but sure. So what were you going to say?
No, nothing. I was just thinking between Psycho and Ocean's 11, the... kind of stories about anti-heroes in a way.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean,
okay.
Psycho is a straight up villain, not even an anti-hero.
Yeah.
But you know, the Psycho is in fact the bad guy, and he's kind of
the Psycho.
I think he gets the most screen time out of like everybody else, right? Out of the two women female characters.
He definitely does. But so Ocean's 11, it was a film that starred the Rat Pack. We're just gonna go ahead and assume that you don't know who the Rat Pack is.
So what is the Rat Pack?
The Rat Pack is a group of men who the media, I don't know who dubbed them this name, but they were dubbed by the media the Rat Pack because they were all a bunch of drinking buddies that met at Humphrey Bogart's house in like the late 50s, and they were just always hanging out together, and then they even did a couple movies together. So the Rat Pack is made up of five guys: Frank Sinatra,
mm-hmm.
Dean Martin,
mm-hmm.
Sammy Davis Jr., Peter Lawford, and Joey Bishop.
So I know of the first three. I have no idea who Peter Lawford or Joey Bishop are.
Yeah, they haven't really... their legacy has not lived on, okay, if you could say. Peter Lawford, he married Kennedy, actually. And he was technically part of the Kennedy family.
Oh.
And
well, then you don't need to act anymore once you're part of that dynasty.
Well, the Rat Pack also... Yeah, exactly. The Rat Pack fell apart because of a falling out Sinatra and Lawford had over a Kennedy thing, which we're not going
to
get into.
Because Frank Sinatra wanted to get into that Kennedy money.
Yeah.
I get it. I'm with you, Frankie.
But Joey Bishop, he was just like a TV personality, and he was a comedian. He's actually maybe, other than Dean Martin, my favorite member of the Rat Pack, because he was really funny. He used to be on these old time TV shows like What's My Line and stuff, and he was just really charming.
More so than Sammy Davis Jr.
Yeah.
Poor Sammy Davis Jr.
I like Sammy.
The joke has always been that he experienced so much racism with these guys. I wonder how much is true. And I have to believe it is true, because I think I saw a little bit of it in this movie. It was really, really shocking when I saw it.
Yeah, we see some racism and we see a lot of sexism.
Oh, the sexism.
It's just too much.
There's so much of it. Should we just, what's it called? Before I guess we get into some of this stuff that we want to talk about, yeah. Do you want to give a quick summary of like what the movie's about?
So there's a bunch of World War II veterans. Mm-hmm. And this guy, Danny Ocean, who's like this ladies' man and just like a, you know, smooth-talking guy. A bunch of him and his pals all get together because they want to rob 3 Las Vegas casinos. Didn't they want to do like 5?
They did five.
Oh my God, yeah. They did 5. But yeah, I'm sorry. I'm actually confusing this for the 2001 film. They robbed 5 Las Vegas casinos on New Year's night. Yeah, so some of the other men that make up the 11 are really well-known character actors from that era, but these are names that some of you might not know. Richard Conte is in it, Henry Silva, Buddy Lester, Richard Benedict, Norman Fell, and Clem Harvey.
They all have that dark hair. They're all kind of the same height. Who was the short guy? The short guy who was like always afraid. There's like, what's it called? It's like the one that like Dean Martin and... Not Dean Martin. Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra are like constantly picking on.
Oh, like the for lack of a better word, the foreign guy?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Sorry.
I didn't really like...
I didn't mean to throw you a brain bender there.
No, I'm like, because I got the cast in front of me, but like, it's just not processing.
Yeah, because they all kind of look alike.
Yeah, they're all kind of interchangeable.
They are very interchangeable.
Well, there's a couple more people in the cast that I want to talk about. There's Cesar Romero, who plays Duke Santos. And then there's Miss Angie Dickinson, who plays Danny's ex-wife, Beatrice.
Oh, right. Sure. Okay. I have no idea what that plot line was about.
Yeah. It was, oh my God. So I wanted to scream.
I would have, all right. Let's just jump right into it. There was a part where Frank Sinatra, I guess his character, Danny Ocean, he's cheating on his wife,
yeah,
right, with some
they're
other
separated
woman.
Yeah,
okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they're separated, right?
Thank you for bringing the scene up. This is the one scene that I was like, are you fucking kidding me? So go ahead, finish.
All right, so wait, are we thinking about the same scene?
Yes.
I'm thinking of the scene where Danny Ocean kisses the other girl in the cheek, gives her his hotel room, and what does she do? She calls the wife, which I guess, like, cool, that's sisterhood, right?
Yeah.
And then Danny Ocean's wife was just like, oh, I trust him, shouldn't. And like, having an enemy like you makes me love him more. I'm just like, what are
it
you?
Was, yeah, it was
what
so terrible.
What are you smoking? What are you smoking?
The woman pretty much found out that Danny Ocean's a fucking two-timer, like womanizing and asshole pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to do his wife a favor by saying, hey, by the way, he's like two-timing you and I'm here to tell you.
Okay.
Yeah, and Beatrice is just like, women like you give women a bad name and like all this stuff. And the woman's on the line going like, I'm trying to help you.
I was so confused by this. You know, like, what? Like, what?
It was so
what
bizarre.
What is happening?
But that's also, like, that's ridiculous old-time stand-by-your-man logic. And you can you clearly know that, like, a man wrote that script.
Obviously.
It's like, well, my wife would stand up for me and know that I still love her, but if I wanted to fool around, I'd fool around.
Yeah.
Like, terrible logic.
Danny Ocean, what a fuckboy.
Yeah. And he's, like, not even taking anyone seriously when he sees them. And he just, like, just touches them. And he's just like, and, like, makes all these faces whenever women open their mouth. And I'm like, you condescending little shit.
Yeah, yeah. Agreed. So I was 100% confused by that scene. Another scene that was not confusing, but like incredibly sexist, was the drunk chick.
Shirley MacLaine?
Yeah. Shirley, is that who she was?
With Dean Martin outside.
Yeah, so she's like all drunk, stumbling out.
Yeah.
And of course, he just plants a big, fat, wet one on her.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's just like, I had to get her attention away from the door. This is the only way, obviously.
This is the only way, yeah.
This is
so
the
ridiculous.
Only way, just, you know.
They made a really crude and sexist remark, though, when Dean Martin... like, didn't want to do the heist.
There was that part in the movie when they're all talking about what they're going to do with their money.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember which guy, because, again, they're all confusing to me. But he was, like, saying, it's just like, I'm going to run for president, and I'm going to undo the 14th and 20th Amendment. So women can't vote, and they can be my slaves.
Yes, I think that's what I was talking
about. All right. And so here's the thing, all right? first of all, he's stupid because it's the 13th Amendment that abolished slavery, and it was the 19th Amendment that gave women the right to vote. So clearly he's just as smart as our current president. But the other thing is just like, Jesus fucking Christ. Like, holy shit, when I heard that line, I'm like, this is the 1960s. Like, this is not that long ago.
This,
have this mentality is just like shocking.
Uh-huh.
So now I know how we have the president who we have, because this is just generations alive.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
it's,
they still idolize this time period.
And that's the thing, because I've seen so many films from not only that year, but older, that just don't have those shockingly sexist moments in them. So when I saw it, I was very taken aback, because I don't really care for the Rat Pack. And I haven't really like dabbled too much in Sinatra type movies, because I'm not the biggest Sinatra fan. So when I saw this, I was just gobsmacked at how much of a product of its generation it was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, arguably all of these films, like, we can't really talk about the newest one, but all of them are very much products of their generation. So they are not going to age well. Just like this film has not aged well, all the other films will not age well. But there should be something charming about products of their generation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and this one isn't charming.
Yeah, this one is very
like, everything that's wrong with that.
Oh, here's the other thing that was wrong with that scene, right? So not only, so he wasn't like undo slavery. Mm-hmm. Sammy Davis Jr. was in the room there.
Yeah.
Like he's black. Like, mm-hmm. if anyone profits from the fact that, like, what's it called? We abolish slavery. It is Sammy Davis Jr. I was shell-shocked. I think I had to rewind. I was just like, there's no fucking way. I miss her that.
And he probably just, like, smiled and was like, just keep smiling so nobody, you know, fucking
says
anything.
Poor Sammy Davis Jr.
Yeah.
Jesus fucking Christ. I swear to God.
Well, it was probably like, but not you, Sammy. You're the only ones we like.
Just gobsmacked by just, like, this was, I was mortified when I saw that.
So let's talk about the heist, right? Because all of these movies, mm-hmm. what's important is the fucking heist.
Sure.
So they want to rob 5 casinos one night. I think, what was it for them? It was like $2 million or something.
Oh, that's a good question. I think it was $1 million.
Yeah, it was.
I don't think it was $2 million. I think it was $1 million. But, you know, because of inflation, like, to us, that's like pennies.
Yeah.
It's a pittance, you know?
For sure. So it's funny because this film doesn't actually spend that much time on the developing of the heist and then the heist itself. There's a lot of even getting the guys together, you know, then they discuss the fact that they're going to do a heist. There's a little bit of planning of the heist, then the actual heist, and then there's a lot of after the heist, which is not really how the next couple of films are going to go, but this is how this film goes. And they had a really interesting way of committing their heists where a lot of them were employees of the casino, and they had to put like some sort of, I guess, like paint on the doors that would signify that they could go in there. Because they were going to turn off the lights.
Right. Those were going to be the doors that had the money counting.
The money, yeah. And so because they decided that, you know, it's New Year's Eve, so like during the length of Auld Lang Syne, we should old acquaintance be forgot, they would turn out the lights. And then like one of the other guys who was there trolling the casino floor would go in and steal the money. And then by the time the lights came back on, they'd be out. So how would they be able to know what door? Well, the guys who were part of the 11 who worked at the casino would put some sort of infrared thing on it so that you could see it.
It was very James Bond-esque.
Yeah, it was really great, like cool, interesting ways of doing it in 1916, terribly dated.
I think my favorite part about that, though, was how they were so nonchalant about a blackout in Vegas, because in the 1960s, like, not much going on in Vegas. Apparently, it's just probably these 5 casinos and that's it.
Yeah.
No homes, no nothing. It's just that.
Yeah.
They were very nonchalant about, like, this blackout. Nowadays, forget it.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
over.
People would lose their fucking shit. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, so one of the 11, who also is arguably the only one who actually fucking mattered out of the 11, dies.
Yes.
Because he's the reason why they lost. Like, he figured out how to lose the power. Like, Sammy Davis Jr. was a garbage man.
Yeah, he was he collects all the money.
Yeah, I think he and Henry Silva helped turn out the power. Richard Conte character was the one who figured out the electricity of all of the buildings so that they could turn off the power. So whatever. He dies in the middle of the street.
Yes.
And then pretty much the rest of the film is this guy, Duke Santos, who is Peter Lawford's new dad-in-law.
Yeah. It's a huge coincidence.
Yeah, right? It's
in the terms of the plot, it was just like, this is too coincidental for my liking.
Yeah.
because basically the way he figured it out is just, it was his new biddy, right? She's just like, oh, my son was here in town. He didn't call me. He's supposed to be out skiing or something.
He's like, wait a minute.
And he's like, wait, your son was here. He was in the army? Probably with this guy. And that's how he figured it out.
It was very absurd.
It's so funny, though. So we all know Cesar Millan would go on to play the Joker.
Cesar.
I said Millan. God damn it. I knew I was going to do that. I kept writing Cesar Romero would go on to play the Joker.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
On Batman. So while I was watching the movie, there's a little part that excited me. So Cesar Romero comes and he's talking to the mob, not the mob. They're the owners of the casinos who are practically mobsters, probably, because, like, let's be real.
Mm-hmm. Like, how'd they get to be that
Vegas
powerful?
Vegas was, what's it called? Vegas is the mob city.
Yeah.
And, you know, Cesar Romero is just like, I'm going to find you your money and you guys give me 30%. Then he goes, and once he finds them, though, my favorite part is that he tells them, oh, you know what? Fuck them. I'm going to give me 50% and, like, you can keep the rest of the money. So he backstabs, first of all, the casino owners. But the reason that kind of that little plot line excited me, and like him talking to the mob bosses, it was fun for me, was because we know that he eventually plays the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Heath Ledger as the Joker has a scene that's very similar to that, where Heath Ledger's Joker was robbing banks. He comes to the mob lords, and he's just like, oh yeah, I'll give you your money back. 50%. I get 50% though.
Mm.
And I was just like, oh my God, I had to wonder if this was intentional or if it's just coincidental.
Huh.
My heart wants to believe it's intentional.
That would be cute. That would be, well,
like a nice little homage to Cesar Romero.
That'd be quite.
It'd be like such a secret Easter egg that, like, yeah. I don't think Mr. Nolan even knew it.
You'd really need to, like, know your shit. Okay. Well, the way that this ends pretty much is that they wanted to give some of the cut of Richard Conte, the deceased man's, to his widow.
Yes.
But then, like, you know, Duke Santos, Cesar Romero's onto them. It just so turns out that at the end, pretty much the money gets burnt.
Right.
They decide to cremate the coffin that they hid the money in to, like, get it past people. Yeah. And then it all gets burnt and nobody gets the money in the end.
No one gets the money in the end. So there's, like, kind of that.
So it's like justice did not pay. Ending. Like, yeah, justice pays in a way. Very like that time of Hollywood, because you couldn't commit crimes like that and get away with it.
They couldn't get away with it, but they basically still did get away with it.
They didn't pay for it. They didn't get the
money. Yeah. They just didn't get the money is the thing. And so, interestingly enough, right, this movie, when it came out, a lot of critics did not like it. It was not very well received because of the fact that they were bad guys. And you're, in a way, supposed to be rooting for these bad guys. And I guess it was just jarring to audiences back then. Did not irk me one bit, because I guess we're just so inundated with, like, these ideas of anti-heroes. You know, we're just constantly watching The Sopranos, Breaking Bad.
Mm.
Like, the bad guy as a main character is nothing surprising. So, like, you know, rooting for bad guys robbing casinos wasn't,
historically,
to me, when I saw it, you know. Like, me as a product of
with
my
your
generation.
2018.
Yes.
Historically speaking, the anti-hero was not in full-fledged at this time. You know, this was still the production code era. So they literally could not, like, it would be against film law for them to get away with it.
Right.
And... you know, I think that the anti-hero was really executed well and, like, really became part of pop culture and what people desired in the mid-60s into the 70s, like, beginning with the Man with No Name trilogy and the Clint Eastwood films and stuff. Right. So this is definitely before that, like 1960. And I don't think there's anything actually cool about these guys. They all just, like, kind of look like your dad and his buddies.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, like, to me, I actually don't pick up on any anti-hero in it. I just pick off on, like, you know, guys on a mission almost movie.
Well, they're bad guys still, though. They're robbing casinos.
Well, yeah, but, like,
because they're supposed to be ex-military, right? So they're supposed to be,
exactly,
like,
though. There's a level of heroes to them. So that's why at the end, like, we can't let them get away with doing a crime, but we don't want them to pay either, because there are, you know, ex-heroes and they're great singers and they're great guys. So, you know, we want to. So it's like this weird, like, in-between world. They're not really anti-heroes, but they're not heroes, but they're not really bad guys.
Yeah. Speaking of singers, there was so much singing in the movie. It was practically like a fucking musical.
I know. That was one of the things I actually liked.
No, pass. I was just like, nah.
EO 11. Someday I'll have me a penthouse. Stacks and stacks of folding.
And also, I'll mention that a really prolific designer, Saul Bass, created the opening sequences. It's not one of his best opening sequences, but nonetheless, he did it. So I wanted a shout out to Saul Bass there. But so this movie was really sexist. Poor Andrew Dickinson.
Yeah. I think one last thing I do want to say, though, about the movie, though, was I did I want to say two things. I did like the ending, though. I did like the fact that like they didn't get away with it. I thought that was nice. Especially,
I kind of saw that coming. This is nothing like the remake.
No, this is nothing like the remake. Or I guess the remake is nothing like the original.
Yeah.
Which right there might as well, just segue into Ocean's 11, okay. 2001. My other point be damned.
Let's do it. I think they wanted to remake this film as early as January 2000. Steven Soderbergh was always going to make these films. And he was like 2000. He also made Erin Brockovich with Julia Roberts. She won her Academy Award for that. You know, he made this film Sex, Lies, and Videotape that was like big at the Sundance and independent market, but he was now becoming a Hollywood filmmaker.
I used to watch that movie at night on Cinemax, thinking there'd be like some dirty stuff. It wasn't that dirty.
It was just a videotape.
Yeah.
But he made in 2000 Erin Brockovich and Traffic, really big, prolific movies with big ensembles and stuff. Okay, so pretty much this is a all-star cast. I think most of these people, even by today's standards, 17 years later, a lot of these people are very well known.
Yes.
They continued the Danny Ocean thing, and like he has a wife that he's trying to, I guess, win back. But they make that more a part of the plot in this one.
Right, more so than the other one. The other one, she's just there. Like, I don't, again, no idea what her role was.
Yeah.
But other than to show that, like,
she had no role. This was
Frank
another.
Frank Sinatra gets some.
Yeah, you know, rewatching Ocean's 11, I actually realized how, again, like, poorly written for the Julia Roberts.
Oh yeah,
it was.
No, Julia Roberts was just a commodity in this movie.
Yeah,
she's just a toy to be basically traded with.
I do not remember this movie being so. At least it wasn't as blatantly sexist. But I was like, oh, this is a terrible role for her. There's like, this does not pass again the Bechdel test, and not every film has to, but like it really fails.
Yeah, I mean, she's the only female character, really.
Just like only female character. Every scene, like when Andy Garcia comes in, he's like, "What are you thinking about?" And she's just like, "You." And like everyone in the world knows that her boyfriend sucks but her, so it's like she's a smart art curator, but she can't walk away from this douchebag. She needs to be told by a mysterious voice on a telephone, which she listens to turn into a channel and watch like this. Okay, I'm not even gonna get started, but
well,
like it's so ridiculous.
Because it's fair, because I mean that just shows you how she was just treated in the movie, right?
Yeah,
like it's just like, you know, Frank Ocean's like, yeah, fine, I'll tell you where your money is if you let go of my girl. Uh-huh. And he's just like, fine, I'll let go of your girl, give me my money because I love money more. Basically, that's basically the plot of the movie. That's
pretty,
how
yeah.
It
yeah.
Almost verbatim.
Yeah. But it took her to look at that in order for her to get a fucking clue. And then the cream of the crop at the end is that they literally refer to her as property when George Clooney gets like out of prison.
Oh, you're right. When Brad Pitt comes in, it's like,
he's
got
like,
your belongings.
I had to go pick up your stuff first. She's just in the back of the car smiling like, I'm your stuff. You know,
that's
it was
so. I never thought about that, but that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Hilarious.
So terrible.
Oh, man, this movie.
So, I always have to go in the sexist rants at first.
No, I think it's fair, especially considering like what the original Oceans is.
Yeah.
In comparison, though, a lot better, though. I think we could say that.
Oh, this 2001?
Iteration? I'm talking about in the sexism. In terms of sexism.
Oh, yeah, no, it's not as blatantly sexist. And it's overall better, more interesting filmmaking, although it's also like really problematic and almost like too fantastical.
It is super fantastical. However, I think it was so well written. It's a very tight script. And the other thing that makes this movie so good was its editing.
Yeah.
It's the use of like kind of editing to manipulate time and kind of like, you know, throw the audience off that really makes this movie what it is.
There's so many shots. Mm-hmm. And it's just, yeah, really tight editing. Like, I love when it's like there's so much footage that you have, like you can cut to all these different close-ups and wide shots and like all this stuff. So that was really great.
Yeah.
Like paced really well. But there's the plot-wise, I don't agree that it's like a tight script because there's actually like a lot wrong with the script.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay.
Tell me.
So the big thing that this film does, and kind of does it in the next one too, it's actually remarkable how much the Ocean's 8 stole from Ocean's 11.
I wouldn't say it stole, but we'll talk about
that. Or just like used as like a format.
That's true.
But the whole time that they're making this ridiculous heist and recreating the Bellagio floors right across from the Bellagio itself. Did you realize that? That one scene?
Was it where across? Like, was it across?
Him and Danny Ocean and Rusty Ryan are fighting. He's like, tell me this is not about Tess. And literally right across, you can see the casino. It's like, how do they not know that they're building
that's so funny.
A duplicate?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Fine.
But whatever. So while they're making these heists, they're doing a second heist, and then they're playing a pretend thing on Linus, on the Matt Damon character, just so that like everyone but Linus, or maybe nobody else knew that they were like goofing him off, and like this was like Danny not being in it was actually part of their game. Like, it actually kind of didn't make any sense. It's like a heist within a heist, essentially, and then they play like mind games with each other, and then but if you think about it logistically, like all the things they had to do in order for like it to all have been realistic, like it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, sure. Suspension of disbelief, I would say. This is no one's really gonna rob Vegas during a big fight, I guess.
I love, my favorite part is when they're talking about the three most successful bank heists. Mm-hmm. And the three most successful bank heists of Las Vegas include just men running with a shitload of money in their arms.
Oh my God.
And at least getting out the door with it. Yeah, so I mean, granted, yes, I love, like, you know, musicals are my favorite genre because, you know, I love the fantasy and it's not supposed to be real. It's escapism. But if you're going to like be like, oh, and while this was happening, this was actually happening, and you're trying to like one up me and be like, haha, we actually fooled you, at least make it like make sense. Like, respect my intelligence.
I don't know. Even when rewatching this, the fooling, like feeling that kind of that, oh my God, that's how they did it. I don't know. It worked for me. I didn't feel like they got me in a disingenuous way, right? Mm. Like the practice footage in security cameras to trick, you know, to trick the cops and stuff, or the big reveal when they're the SWAT team carrying the bags. Like that was fun. It's a very fun movie. I think what I meant when I said the movie was really tight, I was actually talking about dialogue wise. A lot of the characters there, a lot of dialogue is like really, maybe not witty. I think a lot of the success from it though does come from the cast.
Yeah.
In the sense that like, I cannot imagine this character of Danny Ocean being played by anyone other than George Clooney, right? Because I don't know how much acting George Clooney did in this movie.
Mm.
Because if you look at that and like kind of the acting that was done in Batman and Robin, not very different.
Yeah,
they're kind of very same delivery.
Yeah,
so this is just George Clooney being George Clooney.
He's very much George Clooney here, and I think even like Brad Pitt is like very much Brad Pitt here.
Yes,
the only person
I don't know what Brad Pitt is like.
Well,
I imagine him being high maintenance, especially marrying Angelina Jolie. So it's just like that's not what this character was.
Ouch.
Yeah, sorry.
Ouch.
The truth hurts, Brad.
I was just going to say, out of all the big names here, Matt Damon's the only one who's like kind of playing a part.
Yeah, Matt Damon was playing a part.
Yeah. Poor Linus.
Nobody. And then all the other characters, like all the smaller characters, I feel like they were characters.
Yeah. I don't know why they had to give Don Cheadle that British accent. It was so terrible.
That was British? I thought he was trying to be like some off Jamaican accent thing. I had no idea what he was.
I think he was doing a like a Northern England accent.
Oh.
That's what I like was.
That was a terrible accent.
It was so terrible.
Don Cheadle. I expect better from you, especially after, was this before or after Hotel Rwanda? This is before Hotel Rwanda.
So you got better at it.
You got a lot better.
So this one, they wanted to do three. This one is the one where they wanted to do three casinos. The Bellagio, the Mirage, and the MGM Grand.
Right. And they're hitting up Andy Garcia, who owns the three.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually one of my favorite parts of the movie, though, when they're trying to convince Elliot Gould's character. It's just like, we're going to rob casinos. She's like, no, you guys are crazy. Like, security, video, there's no way. But you know what? I fucking hate Andy Garcia. He's my competitor. Fuck him. I'm in.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's again, that's verbatim realist, the plot. Yeah.
That's cute. And they wanted to steal $160 million. Now this time, that's real.
Yes.
That's really cool. And they got, they got this one guy named the Amazing Yen.
Oh, who was like the breakout character, I say, right?
The breakout character, but like also
memorable scenes.
But yeah, and then there's like that one scene where they're going through the plan. Yen asks a question in Chinese. And then Brad Pitt just like answers in English. But then I thought about it and I was like, well, I mean, he's listening to Danny talk in English. So he clearly understands. He just doesn't speak English. So it's, I don't know why that's necessary.
That happens. My mom understands English. She doesn't speak it. She's been in this country for.
Has your mom also robbed 3 Las Vegas casinos?
You don't know her. You don't know her. I don't think she has.
But yeah, so, and they use the same tactic as in the original where they turn off the power. But they don't turn off the power to be able to see their infrared lead doors. They turn off the power for to get by the sensors.
And also for the big switch also is part of the power
outage. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because they have a guy who's controlling.
And
like,
shame on them for not using the power of infrared spray cans and special glasses to see the infrared. That's a missed opportunity by Steven Soderbergh. Bring that back.
Yeah, really? Like,
just bring it back.
Do an ode to the original.
That technology is still ahead of its time.
My favorite part, though, is that when the lights went back on in the original, like, everyone was like, oh, okay. But in the remake...
Yeah, because it's Vegas is fucking, like, the Wild Wild West in the 1960s, apparently.
But in the remake, the lights come back on during the boxing match, and then they just, like, start punching the shit out of each other.
Of course.
And then, like, people start entering the stage. It's like, why, when the lights go out for 10 seconds, does everyone lose their shit in the remake?
I mean...
That was a
little
weird.
Yeah, that's true. I would have lost my shit too. Well, that's it. They probably jumped the stage. They definitely jumped the stage because that's technically a timeout, right? Like if you're in the middle of a boxing match, power goes out. And just because they come up doesn't mean like what's it called? Like you should be
the game just
match.
Turns into utter chaos.
Yeah, it just turned into utter chaos. Yeah, so people are
it's
now
not
pissed
start
off
over.
Like,
or
how
anything.
Dare you? I have money running on this game, you know.
Yeah, I was just. I will say, you know, it was very. It's an entertaining. There were some things that I was like, "What?" But I was very disappointed revisiting it. Julia Roberts' role in it.
Oh yeah, no, Julia Roberts. I mean, even I think she's like the least favorite thing about all of the Ocean's movies. Isn't she not even in the third one?
She's not in the third one.
Yeah, it's Catherine Zeta-Jones who's a new female character.
No, she was in the second one. Catherine Zeta-Jones was in the second one.
Oh, she's in. I thought she was in the third.
No.
Oh.
No, they got rid of both the girls.
Oh well, you know. You got to do what you got to do. They were just holding the movies back, apparently.
So fucking stupid.
I don't mean that, guys, by the way. I'm just like...
That's what some people think.
I was being sarcastic.
Yeah. It was just very devastating to see that literally the only time she was there was like swooning or talking about like a man or some guy.
Although I did like her rapport with George Clooney. Like my favorite line in the movie is just like...
You're a thief and a liar.
I only lied about being a thief. I don't do that anymore.
Steal.
Lie.
I don't know. Cute. Cute banter. I love them.
There's this one scene I really like where they have 10 and then they're like at a bar and Brad Pitt just has his head down. He's like,
you think we need one more? You think we need one more? All right, we'll get one more.
Like, I like that. It was like a cute, like he's not responding, but you know, like stupid shit like that.
It's the movie itself is very, it's a very cute movie. It's to be honest, it's one of the movies that even rewatching it, I think it was still entertaining enough to I liked it.
I do like it, although I am kind of like, wait, what? Like maybe it's me thinking too much about it.
I think so.
I think a lot about too many things, but like if you really try and like think about, wait a minute, so that means that they had to have like done this in order to have successfully fooled Linus or like to successfully have planted this thing with Tess watching. And it's just like, it's, and then I'm like, why am I thinking about this?
Yeah, just don't overthink it, girl.
It just doesn't make any sense, but I guess it's not supposed to, whatever.
I had never seen obviously the 1960s movie until we decided we're going to do it for the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I really thought I would, cause you know, lately I've been enjoying the originals. So sad. I was just like, oh, the original is not that good. I think the 2001 is a lot better than the original.
My track record proves that I usually do go for the original. And in this case, nope, not the case. But, you know, like a good movie is a good movie no matter what. And this movie is not a good movie. The original.
Yeah.
1960.
What was that rule that you had mentioned? Just because I want to bring it up here because I think this actually is important here for this 2001 remake. What is Charles' Law?
So my Uncle Charles has a law and he says that if a film is created originally for the cinema, meaning that it's not based on a book or any other body of work outside, it was originally created as a film, any remake of it will never surpass the original. Only if it's an adaptation of something else may it be better than the first rendition of it.
Okay.
Do you think Charles's law is right when it comes to Ocean's 11?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I think is way better.
The 2001 movie is by far way better than the the original
1960.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah. But what about the revival 2018?
Yeah.
Was it this year?
Yeah, oh, it was
wow,
this year.
2018. So 2018's Ocean's 8.
Let's do this.
Let's go.
This is technically a revival of the Ocean series. I mean, it's not, I don't know if it's a reboot. It's definitely not a remake. And it's technically a spinoff, but like they know that the Ocean's franchise, you know, they're like, we got to revive it. People love these movies. They want to see more heists. But George Clooney was like, nope, never doing it again. And so they were like, I think a couple years ago, they're like, no, we're not doing Ocean's 14. We're not doing Ocean's 14. So how do we revive this series?
What is George Clooney doing that he can't do another Ocean's movie?
he doesn't want to, damage his reputation.
He damaged it with that Oscar speech where everyone just kind of turned their back on him.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, it's just like, the damage is done, George. Just might collect that money, you know? Armin is the one who's like saving the world.
Yeah.
That's his wife. For those who don't know.
I don't know. He was like, nope, don't want to do it. I want this film to go out with a bang. And they got so much shit for Ocean's 12 in particular.
Ocean's 13 is that bang?
I guess so.
Mr. Clooney.
Yeah.
You're just lying through your teeth now.
But they were pretty much like, you know, let's just revive it. And then somebody had the brilliant idea of all-female cast. Around the same time, they were like, we should do a Ghostbusters all-female cast.
It's interesting, right? Because this is a property that like their original character. Oh, the Ghostbusters. There's like a fandom, right? I don't think Ocean's 11 has like a crazy fandom.
Yeah, it's not like regarded as like a classic. There wasn't anything at Universal Studios or like no cartoon spinoff of it.
There's not a Ocean's 11 experience in Vegas. Yeah. There should be.
Oh, that'd be cute. Isn't.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Where you get to rob a bank. Oh my God, it could be an escape the room. You guys, I'm going to fucking do not steal my idea, people.
Ocean's 8, all-female revival of the Ocean series. Now, the movie begins the exact same way as Ocean's 11 does.
Yes.
They both, like, you know, saying why they think they deserve to get out of prison, and you know that they're full of shit. And that's when we immediately find out that the Sandra Bullock character is related to Danny Ocean.
Yes.
And spoiler alert, guys.
Oh, there's a lot of spoilers because this movie just came out, so, like,
yeah.
The audience is probably not see this. So, actually, yeah, fair warning, there's a lot of spoilers coming up.
Yeah, apparently... Danny Ocean is dead.
Yeah, good. That's how the producers treat him. It's just
pretty much. They like
it's like, you don't want to be in another Ocean's movie. You're dead.
Yeah, you're fucking dead to us. But
although that's after the open, because like when she visits the grave, the mausoleum, her first thing is like, you better be in there. So who knows? Maybe he fakes his death.
True, but they over sentimentalize like the fact that Danny Ocean is dead. I mean, like,
you think so? They was just she the visits the mausoleum twice. Weird. That's it. I think it's a good way to end it. No?
I thought the ending was very bizarre.
We're just jumping around, really.
Yeah, really are. But okay. So her partner, the Brad Pitt, if you will, is the greatest actress on earth, Cate Blanchett.
Oh, she's so good in this movie.
She's so fucking good. She's so good. Beautiful. Her outfits were unbelievably amazing.
Did she not give you lesbian vibes?
Wait, the character?
Her character.
Yeah. The two. Yeah, they were going to les out of the part. I thought so too.
I was very disappointed that they introduced her ex-boyfriend halfway
through
the movie.
Because when they do that really unnecessary historical part of it.
The flashback.
The flashback 10 years ago. She was like, me and Lou were going through a rough patch. And I'm like, oh my God, does that mean you guys are like breaking up? Like, I really wanted them to go through with it. So as far as I'm concerned, they're fucking lesbians.
Like, she could be bi.
She could be bi. You know. Yeah. They were in a lesbian relationship. But I'm such a fucking Cate Blanchett.
You know
fan.
What? I mean, you know what they say, when there's a penis, there's a problem. And Lou, not Lou, people say that. And Claude Becker was the penis that came between Lou and
Debbie Ocean.
I know all these women by their actual names, not their
names.
When I'm watching this movie, I wasn't watching 8-Ball, I was watching Rihanna.
My girl
Riri.
Yeah.
I wasn't watching the designer, I was watching Helena Bonham Carter, you know what I mean?
Again,
this problem that happens when you cast like these really recognizable faces, you know, you're only seeing the actor, not sometimes the person, you know. So
for sure.
Mindy Kaling, for example.
Yeah.
So.
And Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway. Who was basically playing Anne Hathaway, I think.
Like an over exaggerated version of Anne Hathaway.
So
yeah.
I don't know why Anne Hathaway gets so much hate. I love her.
I have no issues with Anne Hathaway.
So many people hate Anne Hathaway for some reason.
It's easy to hate women, first of all.
I don't know how you get hate Anne Hathaway.
I don't know why you can hate anyone that you don't personally know.
Oh, I could hate a lot of people I personally don't know. That's so easy for me.
Well, I mean, unless it's Ben Affleck. But yeah, it really... There's so much similarity. So Debbie gets out of jail. Apparently scores herself a hotel room, which I got to try one day.
Oh, I love her. I love actually, I do love her introduction, right? Mm-hmm. We really see her as the con woman. I think even more so in the first 5 minutes than we got to see really Danny being a con man.
Yeah, that's
true. We only know Danny being a con man from like hearsay, what other people have said about him. We don't really get to see him really being the con man, right?
That's true. In the film, too, like, he doesn't really do that much.
Right, no, because, like, he's an ex-con, right? So he knows that if he gets caught, like, he's going to go to jail. Yeah. So his role was to be intentionally, like, caught so that way he can't be a suspect. But all he did, he was just a mastermind. Here, at least we get to see Sandra Bullock doing some conning. And I love her introduction. I think when we see her out on the street... The way she stole clothing, the way she got that hotel room.
I don't know. I don't want to go into like every single character, but I guess that's just like, you know, there's eight of them. We said it. Mindy Kaling, Sarah Paulson, Helena Bonham Carter.
Yes.
And then Awkwafina. And then Anne Hathaway. So their heist is that they want to rob a Cartier necklace during the Met Gala. And they use one of the most famous actresses in the world, who Anne Hathaway plays, as kind of like a stooge for
yes.
it. And then at the end, spoiler alert, turns out that like she was smarter than she was letting off because she's that good an actress, and that she was kind of secretly part of it.
She wasn't secretly part of it. She was she kind of figured out what they were doing, specifically Helena Bonham Carter's character, yeah. and kind of put together pieces and was just she kind of figured it's just like, all right, well, I want in. And so they had to split their fortune now with So it was originally seven, and then she became the eighth.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. There were only seven.
That's what happened.
Yeah. And this is... Okay, so this movie has so many similar beats. It's ridiculous.
Oh, it's almost beat by beat a remake.
Yeah, it's...
Of Ocean's
yeah,
11.
It's not supposed to be a remake, but it is.
It basically is. It's yeah. What's it called? They're taking a very... They take the formula,
mm-hmm.
and they just change the sex and change the setting.
Down to when Lou pulls Debbie aside and she's like, tell me this isn't a revenge mission or yeah. I walk off.
Yes.
I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I just saw this scene. And I was like a little upset because like, you know, I love Cate Blanchett so much. And
it was a little forced because, you know, the Ocean's 11 movie.
Mm.
So especially if you saw them like so close together.
Yeah.
Right. However, I think so Danny Ocean was robbing the banks for not in an act of revenge. He was doing it to try to win his love back, right?
Yeah,
that was his true prize. Again, she was a commodity. Here I respect Sandra's character of getting revenge. I think her motivations are much clearer than Danny's were.
That's true.
And
yeah.
in a way more noble, because you know she was dicked over by again the penis that causes problems.
Yeah. By a douchebag, and she let him get his just desserts. Yeah, I did like that too.
So
it was like a little twist on
it. And also, Lou put up a fight for that one scene, and then after she's like, fuck it.
Yeah. No, yeah, she gave up. She stopped caring.
She's just like, you know what? Fuck all men.
They didn't play it, yeah. But you know how I complained in Ocean's 11 how, like, while one heist was going on, they were actually doing another heist, and it was like a heist within a heist and all this stuff?
Sure.
They did that in this one.
They
and it really didn't make sense.
This one made a lot less sense. Actually, this one, even the ending, I was very confused by. But we'll talk about this heist within the heist. So, again, spoiler, guys. The heist was the Cartier necklace, the Toussaint. Yeah. Okay, the Toussaint. And that was the first heist, right? They were going to steal that one. But they were also going to use that necklace to frame Bleecker, the guy who dicked over Sandra Bullock's character in the in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So... That was one thing. But then the other thing they were stealing was just like, since they were at the Met Gala, which I think we should talk about too, the Met Gala, the fact that this takes place at the Met Gala. They were at the Met Gala and they were unveiling the jewelry of like the royals. That was the real target for them. While we, the audience, are like worried about like the diamond from Cartier, what we don't know until the very end is that they had brought back the amazing yen from the original movie mm-hmm. to steal the other diamonds. I, you know, He was like one of the best parts of the first one, or like when you see his acrobatics.
Yeah.
So to bring him back is obvious as to why you would want to bring him back. But it was also kind of that like it was like kind of that gotcha moment. Like,
yeah, well, this was weird how it's like we're going to spend all this time establishing how this heist happens. And then, oh, psych, the actual real heist, we're going to explain how that happened in at
the
very
like literally like the last like 5 minutes of the film.
In the original Oceans, like you had spent time with what was happening so that you're like, oh, this is what they were acting. But this Yen thing happened like in 3 seconds. They're like, oh, by the way, this is the like real heist. So like,
right.
Like they're similar, but like the because execution
you
of
got
that,
to really train with them.
Yeah.
And all the stuff that we got to train with the ladies in this one was all related to the heist of the diamond necklace. Not at one point do we see anything to do with the diamonds
the heist
that
of
were
all
being
the other shit.
Of the, all yeah. the jewelry, right?
Which
as
is,
a result, it kind you do kind of feel cheated.
Yeah, especially because it's thanks to a man.
Right. Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, that's it's true. Like, oh, what are these ladies good for then? It's like the real heist was done by one guy. Like, that kind of pissed me off, but whatever.
There's a line where she says, like, we're women, and this is the first time where, like, us not being noticed is going to come to our advantage. Yeah, there's a line that's where women are invisible, and this is the one time where, like, that's going to come in handy. We're going to use that to our advantage. Yeah, Sandra Bullock's character says that to Lou when they're trying to figure out the crew. And I thought a little heavy-handed in terms of like what the movie's really about. However,
a little pandering.
Yes, you're right. It panders.
Yeah.
This movie does pander, but
oh, it panders big time.
But I think it kind of succeeds in the pandering though.
Yeah, it didn't bother me essentially. Yeah, I wasn't like, "Ooh, you're really tugging at my heartstrings and you're really using like moment of women like and where we are right now in mm-hmm. terms of society." But at the same time, also, it's also assuming that all women are interested in a certain type of scene and demographic, which was kind of like.
So expand upon that. What do you mean?
Like, OK, well, because it's an all women heist, then why does it have to be about jewels at the Met Gala? And like, why do we have to be overdone with like fashion and like all these things? So it's just like,
you're right.
Is it because it's about women?
OK, so that's a brilliant point that you make up. When you think of Vegas, you think of men. Because you think mm-hmm. of strippers, you think of like gambling, that's all like stuff that's associated with men. And yet, with women, for this movie, they decided to go
fashion
with
and accessories.
Fashion, Met
jewelry.
Gala, Anna Wintour, mm-hmm. Vogue magazine. Like, these are all, what's it called? These are all things that are associated with women. And I actually, I was wondering too, as I was watching the movie, like, why this? Like, is this just because it's a woman thing? Or is this necessarily the other thing, though? I was thinking it could be just a cultural moment that we're in. It's a lot more prevalent in society, like what the Met Gala is. It's like the most exclusive party because that's just where we are as a generation. I remember a couple years ago, like the big scandal was the fact that Kim Kardashian was invited to the Met Gala. Why? Yeah. Because Anna Wintour despised the Kardashians, but she married Kanye West and she's like, well, fuck. Now I got to invite Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
And Kim Kardashian was featured in the movie, like it's a B-roll.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the Met Gala kind of pisses me off because the Metropolitan Museum of Art is a fantastic museum, but the Met Gala represents, you know, 1% bubble world.
It most certainly does.
And like the rest of the world watches with their mouths agape and like drool coming out of their mouths. But at this, and I'm Rolando's yeah. putting his hand up.
How
like, I take
you.
Offense to
I
that.
I do take offense to that because I want to be part of that world.
But it's like,
what okay. do you think I'm doing this podcast for? I want Anna Wintour to hear this and be like, you know what, child? You're invited.
You know, it gets me a little aggravated with our culture and with our society because it's like, you know, it's still 2018. Like, this is one of the more realistic things that I'm seeing in terms of cinema and what it's presented to me and things I can relate with. And I'm like, oh my God, what I have to relate with is celebrity worship and like shallowness. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and granted, that's what all these movies are about. It's about money and it's about, you know, the best things in life aren't free mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
It's about this so idea like, of luxury. Like, what?
Yeah.
What is
and,
luxury?
Like, the American dream, essentially. But it's all, and it's like fantasy world. So I fucking get it. But at the same time, it's really hard. Like when it was the Met Gala, like Heidi Klum is there and all this stuff. I'm like, oh my God.
Katie
right.
Holmes.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, everyone's like more than willing to play themselves, be these people who get invited to ridiculous events like this and put on like really expensive jewelry and dresses. And it's just like, it just kind of bothers me. Cause I'm like, oh, this is such a reality.
It's the harsh reality of our world at the moment.
Yeah.
I am for one okay, so I'm not okay.
Because you want to be a part of
it. Yeah, that's the thing. I was like, well, I'm like the Little Mermaid, and that is what's it called? They're the land walkers. You know, yeah. I want to be part of that world. I'm just like singing here
in my microphone, reaching
out to them. I'm hoping they hear this.
Actually, I'm looking right now on Wikipedia, side note, and by the character description of Lou, they refer to her as Debbie's soulmate. And partner in crime.
Oh, I believe that. You know.
Yeah, which is so cute.
It's true.
It is true.
They are.
Yeah.
They are. I think they.
I really thought that that would be the end scene.
That they would make out. That they would leave.
Yeah, like hand in hand.
Like, you know, Rihanna getting the 8-ball pool bar mm-hmm. and stuff like that. I think mm-hmm. like her picking up Sandra Bullock at the motorcycle.
Yeah, yeah. I think I was like
that
I
would have been so romantic.
They could have. They should have gone down the that. They should have gone down the lesbian storyline, but they didn't because Fuckers. Hollywood tends to be a little bit on the cowardice side.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially with women, I feel like.
Yeah.
More. Yeah. There's not that many Hollywood lesbian films, but like Call Me By Your Name just came out and like all these other gay man films.
And they love Simon. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Yeah. And like Queer Eye is a thing, but where's. Okay. So anyway, where's Lesbian Eye?
I honestly did very much enjoy Ocean's 8. I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought it was going to. And it wasn't that I had like necessarily low expectations. I think what it was is just like sometimes a lot of these like all female reboots and remakes when they do the gender swap, sometimes they feel mediocre. Like all the only original thing that they're bringing is the swap, right?
Yeah.
This one, for some reason, I think it was maybe that change of venue too. And the motivations of these characters being different. True. Like I think these characters had stronger motivations than the previous two films. Right? In the original Ocean's 11 in the 1960s, like, why were they stealing? The only one character who actually had a motive was a guy who had gotten that medical diagnosis.
Yeah, for his family, yeah. Right. The rest of them were just greedy bastards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then in Ocean's 11, mm-hmm. they were really just doing it for the thrill.
And for Tess back. And yeah, they were con men. And sure. Because they were greedy bastards.
But then, yeah, that's really it. They were just greedy. Like, sure, George Clooney had, like, one more goal, which was to get his wife back, but...
Yeah. And in this one, she wants revenge. She wants revenge. And they're greedy bastards.
No, and they're greedy bastards, but they kind of have, like, dreams. That they have, like, reasons that they want to make this money, right? Helena Bonham Carter's character needs to get out of her debt and kind of continue with her fashion dreams. Mindy Kaling needs to escape her mother's overbearingness.
Okay.
I'm
yeah.
just saying, it's just
yeah.
like, I think you got
Sarah
a chance
Paulson
to...
wants to.
I don't know what Sarah Paulson wanted to do. Like, she opened up an eBay shop? Is that what she did? Hers was the weirdest one to me, to be quite honest.
I didn't really understand any of hers. And Lou wanted to.
I'm just saying, yeah, I feel like the women had a little bit stronger motivations. I got to like understand a little bit more about what the women. Oh, we forgot to mention though, this movie, the original one, the original one had that brought in that character who's like hunting them down. This movie also brought that kind of character in. It was James Corden's character.
Yes, that's true. That's true, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not, that wasn't really prevalent in the 2001 remake.
No, it wasn't. That was more of what the sequel was, but whatever. We're not going to talk about the sequel. So overall, do you think this revival was needed?
I do think this revival was needed. I think it was a nice way of like retelling the Ocean's story. And the gender swap, I think, was handled in a nice manner. Again, these are bad guys, and I don't know how often we've gotten to see women as the bad guys.
Yeah, you keep saying they're bad guys.
They're bad.
But it's
they're
like, I mean, they're doing bad things.
Okay, fine. They're doing bad things.
They're committing crimes. This is
they are amoral people.
But they're doing it in the name of money, and America's all about money, so technically they're like, never represented as bad people doing bad things.
Like, you're supposed to make money the righteous way.
You're talking really like... lawful good here. That is your like, Dungeons and Dragons
you're
alignment.
Right. I am. How often do you really get to see movies where like the women are doing the bad things?
No, and having fucking fun.
Yeah,
I agree
and not
with you.
Being and not feeling bad about it.
Any of these movies, we never in 1960 they didn't need this fucking movie. In 2001 they didn't need to remake it, and in 2018 they didn't need to revive it. None of these films are necessary. A lot of the time too, they just remind us of the greed of America. You know, like what it is that we like preoccupy ourselves with and how shallow we really are as a country. So as a whole, what they represent is problematic. Sure. Of course, you know, people just want to look at people in really nice, you know, really nice fitted clothes, like tailored suits, you know, hopping all across the country, like living their best lives and stealing a bunch of money and getting away with it. Everybody wants to see that. So I get why they exist. But they also do reveal a lot about our psyche. So regardless of, like, I'm just saying that in general of all the Ocean's films. In terms of this revival, though, I completely agree. I am so glad we got to see girls have some fun and kick some fucking ass and speak some fucking German. Yo, good for you, Sandra Bullock, speaking fucking fluent German and shit. Go for you.
This is ein grauenhaft organisiertes Event. Habt ihr schon einmal von Beschilderungen gehört? Nein? This is Wahnsinn. Wahnsinn.
I think that it wasn't needed, but I'm just, we need more movies like this in general. So if we're doing it in the revival, in the name of a revival of an Oceans series, just so like people can be more open to seeing films like this, then so fucking be it. All right, so let's do a lightning round.
Lightning round.
Well, let's compare the Oceans. Danny Ocean of Frank Sinatra, Danny Ocean of George Clooney, or Debbie Ocean of Sandra Bullock.
Okay, I would say George Clooney is Danny Ocean. And then the second place, and very close second, I will say, is Debbie Ocean.
I'm gonna have to go Debbie, actually. She spoke fluent German. That like really got me. I was just like, oh my god, Sandra.
I was also really impressed with that.
You're fucking making me wet here, girl.
George Clooney's delivery and kind of like his persona, that's what really, I think that's what ultimately got me. But I love Sandra Bullock in this movie. I think she was great.
And she speaks fluent German. That like, I looked that up. She did. She grew up in Germany, so she does speak fluent German.
Look at that.
Okay, so as right hand people, do we like Dean Martin, Brad Pitt, or Cate Blanchett?
I'm going to go with Cate Blanchett.
Fuck yeah, Cate Blanchett every day. If Cate Blanchett was my soulmate and my partner in crime, I wouldn't need no Cartier necklace, okay? we're holding hands and we're just like, we're going wherever the wind fucking takes us, man. Whatever. All right, fuck it. Yeah, so I guess that's it for tonight. Thanks, Bobby, for being adorable.
Looking our ways, jumping around on top of us.
So until next time, stay unoriginal.